On today's edition of Locked On LSU, we'll take a look around the SEC, looking at three of LSU's future opponents and how they fared this past weekend and how some of their performances were a little bit shocking to me, and I'll explain why. Plus, so much more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, wherever you like to listen to your podcast, you can find us there. But we're also on YouTube as well. Channel's called Locked On LSU, and you can watch the podcast or listen on the go. My name is Caroline Fenton, and I am your host, as I am always, every day. I've been covering LSU football since 2016. I graduated from LSU in 2019, and I now host a sports talk radio show in Nashville, Tennessee. The first thing that I wanted to get into was, you know, I know I do this just as an LSU fan and also just a college football fan, but I'm sure you do this too. You know, as diehard fans, we are interested in what's going on with the rest of the SEC, especially when it comes to LSU's opponents or LSU's SEC West opponents. We're always dialed into whatever's going on. I'd love to admit that on my Saturdays, I do something other than sit on the couch and watch football and do something a little bit more fun and more exciting. But you know what? I would be lying if I said I did that. And you're probably the same way too, but it's okay. That's okay. We own it. It's a lifestyle. But there were three future LSU opponents, yearly LSU opponents, who had performances on Saturday this past week that were very surprising to me, and not in a good way. And so I've asked my question about each of those three. I asked myself, is that shocking performance? Was that a one-off? Was that just a fluky day that they'll move past and get over? Or was that just kind of what this team is this year? Are we just kind of, you know, in store for an uncharacteristic year for that team? Or do I just not know? Do I just need to see a little bit more from that team? Is there just two differing sample sizes that I just can't necessarily put my finger on it? So I want to start with one of those teams, one of those opponents. And that's Alabama, because Alabama had an incredibly uncharacteristic performance against Texas on Saturday. Alabama was favored by 21, I believe, if not more. I believe the line was anywhere, the spread was anywhere between 21 and 24. So sportsbooks, Vegas was in store for a blowout. And that's honestly what I expected too. I have a betting show on every Saturday morning in Nashville. You can listen to it on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Facebook Live, and the Game Nashville app. Shameless plug. Every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. Central to 11 Central. And I said, that's easy money, I feel like. You know, I think Texas with Sark and with Quinn Ewers and with all of these 4- and 5-star recruits coming in, I think that Texas will eventually be back. They have the talent and the coaching staff to be able to do so. I just don't think that's this year, especially not against Alabama, especially not against an Alabama team that showed zero mercy and very, very few mistakes against Utah State week one. Boy, was I wrong. And so was Vegas, because that was a barn burner. I mean, that was, I got to a certain point where I was like, Texas is gonna win this game. Alabama looks atrocious. Alabama doesn't deserve to win this game. But they did ultimately, squeaked out a win, 21-20. Alabama got the win by 1 point. But that was an uncharacteristic performance by Alabama, not just because they played Texas close, but because it was so sloppy. Actually, the sloppiest game that we've ever seen from a Nick Saban coach team, at least at Alabama. 15 penalties for 100 yards. That's the most ever penalties in the Saban era in a single game. That was the most since 2019 in the Iron Bowl when they played Auburn. They committed 13 penalties for 96 yards. And Alabama lost that game. Because if you would have given me those stats on paper, 15 penalties for 100 yards, Bryce Young only threw for one touchdown and 200-something yards, I would have said, oh my God, Alabama lost that game. You don't come back from that many penalties for that many yards. You don't come back from that. But of course, Alabama found a way to win, as they usually do. But that was uncharacteristic because they just looked so undisciplined. And if there is one thing about a Saban team, they're going to be disciplined. That's how they win so many close games. That's how they beat so many really strong opponents. It's because they play clean football. 15 penalties for 100 yards, that is not clean football. I mean, just look at Willie Henderson, for example, their linebacker, who is, you know, heralded to be, you know, a top, you know, top five, top 10 draft pick, if not the first draft pick overall in the 2023 draft. You know, he's an early Heisman hopeful. He was in discussion for the Heisman Trophy last year. He had three of Alabama's 15 penalties, two offsides penalties, one roughing the passer, one of which gave Texas a first down. You can't make mistakes like that. You cannot make mistakes like that and expect to continue to win games. I mean, their wide receivers, they weren't catching a damn thing on Saturday. Bryce Young delivered so many beautiful balls that just fell right between the hands of the wide receiver. That was difficult. They could not get the ball moving downfield. And I felt bad for Bryce Young, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. I think Bryce Young is a very good quarterback, and he's the reason why Alabama was able to come back and win that game. Ultimately, it fell on the kicker, but it was on Bryce Young to be able to move the ball downfield with a minute and a half down on the clock. He constructed that 11-play, 75-yard drive, going 6 for 8, passed for 51 yards, ran for 17, a fourth down conversion, and a 7-yard touchdown pass to Jahmyr Gibbs to win that game. Bryce Young is the reason why they won that game, but it was not pretty, especially considering Texas was without their starting quarterback, their former five-star recruit, Quinn Ewers, for majority of the game, when he left the game with an injury, which, let me say, just brutal for Quinn Ewers. I feel for him. I'm hoping for a very quick recovery for Quinn Ewers. I hate to see that for anyone, but especially someone with such a bright future and such a talented player like Quinn Ewers. But I digress. The reason why I don't think that is going to be who Alabama is, and the reason why I don't think that is, you know, what we can expect from Alabama moving forward, the reason why I think that was more so a fluke for Alabama rather than this is just who they are, is because of Bryce Young. Now, maybe Alabama has more games coming down the pipe where they're sloppy or they aren't very disciplined or they commit penalties. Even in a game where they committed more penalties than any other Nick Saban coach team has at Alabama, they won because Bryce Young was able to move them down the field. And because this is just so out of character for Alabama. It's not just about Bryce Young because but he deserves credit for it. It's not just about Bryce Young. It's about Nick Saban too. Let's not forget that Alabama played Auburn close last year in the Iron Bowl. They took it to overtime. It was double overtime. And they ended up winning that game. And then they turned around in the SEC championship the next couple of weeks, and they beat Georgia 41-24, the eventual national champions in the SEC championship game. That's just what Nick Saban coach teams do. I have no doubt that Nick Saban went into that locker room and ripped them a new one, win or not, ripped them a new one for how undisciplined they look out there. So when I looked at Alabama's uncharacteristically sloppy performance, I don't look at that and say, kind of rub my hands together and think, oh boy, LSU's in for a shootout, or oh boy, you know, the SEC West is up for grabs. Maybe it is. I'm not willing to say that after week two, but once I see more from Arkansas, more from Mississippi State, more from LSU, I'll be willing to say that. But I think that this is more of a fluke rather than it is a definition of Alabama's season, just because Bryce Young and Nick Saban, they've got their stuff together. But coming up next, the second team that LSU plays later on in the schedule that I thought, what in the world happened there? So we'll get into that coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about betonline.net. Because BetOnline is your number one source for all of your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. You can find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's opening week's games. And also, we've got, you know, a big slate of the NFL on Sunday. We've got some really fun games, so bet on that with BetOnline. BetOnline is also your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information. They've got live betting, esports, and scores. Plus, it is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your sports, your favorite sports and events. They've got MLB, which is coming down the pipe. You know, the last few games of the regular season. Looking forward to some October baseball coming up very soon. Plus, they've got MMA, boxing, and golf. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Amazon or Spotify or however you like to listen to your podcast, you can find us there. But you can also find us on YouTube as well. So you just search Locked On LSU in the search bar, hit that red subscribe button, and then you'll get notified as soon as Locked On LSU podcasts drop. But Alabama had an uncharacteristically bad game against Texas. I think, hey, that's a fluke for Alabama. They'll move forward and they'll continue to steamroll majority of the teams on their schedule because that's just what Nick Saban coach teams do. And it's unfortunate. And that's why it's unfortunate to play in the SEC West. But moving forward, the second team that LSU plays on their schedule that had just a head-scratching performance was Texas A&M. What happened with A&M on Saturday? Falling 17-14 to App State in College Station? Whoa. I understand App State is a notorious giant killer. Let's never forget that Michigan game. And they did it again. They struck again. It's just like Troy. When LSU lost to Troy in 2017. I mean, just gross. Georgia State does the same thing. Giant killers. Don't put them on your schedule. Don't schedule them because they have a sneaky way. The Sun Belt teams have a sneaky way of, you know, beating these SEC powerhouses, but I just digress. I wasn't thrilled by what I saw from Texas A&M in their first game. Who do they play week one? I'm blanking on it. Doesn't matter. It was a cupcake. And I wasn't thrilled by what I saw from Texas A&M in their first game, but I kind of chalked it up to, okay, you know, Haynes King needed a little bit of time to get going. He hasn't played in a game since week one of 2021. He just needed to get reacclimated. He needed to get his feet underneath him. He just needed to figure some things out. And they ended up having a resounding victory in week one. And I figured they'd continue kind of that momentum moving forward into App State. And then they would be ready to take on SEC play. Boy, was I wrong. Man, Texas A&M did not look good on Saturday. Anaya Smith, their leading wide receiver, great player, by the way. He even said in the locker room, he was like, we weren't bought in today. We really haven't been bought in. We've seen flashes of players not being bought in ever since fall camps and some spring practices. That's really bad. Texas A&M's offense could not get anything moving against App State. I mean, they only put up 180 total yards and one touchdown, their offense. Texas A&M didn't have a single offensive touchdown in the first half. They went into half tied 7-7 because they had a special teams touchdown, because they had a kick return to the house. And that was how they were able to tie App State at the half. So offensively, 180 yards, one touchdown. Haynes King only had 97 passing yards. They missed a kick. They looked unorganized and they looked unprepared. It was bad from Texas A&M on Saturday against App State. They deserved to lose that game. They did not look like the better team out there. It didn't look like a bunch of 4 and 5 stars out there, but that's what it was. So my question, the same question that I asked about Alabama, is this who they are or was this just a fluke? Was this just, you know, you need some time to figure some things out. You know, you still got Haynes King coming back who hasn't been out there for at least a season. You know, what's going on here? But different than what I said about Alabama, I think this is what Texas A&M is this year. And I say that for one reason. The exact reason why I think Alabama was just a fluke is the same reason why I think A&M is that's just who they are this year. And that's Jimbo Fisher. There have been some serious upgrades that this A&M offense has needed for a couple of years now. I know they had one of the top offenses in college football in 2020. They were the 5th-ranked team in 2020. They just narrowly missed the college football playoff. I know that. But I almost feel like with A&M, Jimbo Fisher has been trying to chase the high of 2014 ever since 2014. Jimbo Fisher's been trying to find his Jameis Winston ever since Jameis Winston went to the pros. And he keeps trying to do that by trying to recreate his offense that he had at Florida State in 2014 rather than evolving his offense. He runs the same offense that he did in 2014. I mean, football's like dog years. You know, you have to constantly keep up. Things change very, very rapidly. And you have to always evolve. You have to always change. That's how you're successful. That's why Nick Saban's been able to be successful over so many years, is because he'll develop one style of play and he'll adapt to whatever the new style of play is, whether that's up-tempo, whether that's air raid, whether that's run first, whether that's, you know, really big, like husky offensive linemen that just block for a running quarterback, whatever that is, whatever the style of play is. You have to constantly evolve, even if you don't want to. Which Nick Saban made it very clear. He did not want to evolve into an up-tempo air raid offense. And that's what they did. Maybe not necessarily a true air raid, but, you know, a very pass-first offense. That's what Nick Saban did, and he's been very successful doing so. Jimbo Fisher has been trying to run the same kind of pro-style offense that he had in 2014. You know, a massive playbook, pretty confusing, which should be confusing for the defenses to figure out. It's incredibly calculated. But it's almost too organized that it's so much easier for the defenses to figure out exactly what they're doing. There's no explosiveness or pizzazz or oomph in this A&M offense, at least that I've seen so far through 2 weeks. So I don't think that this is going to be just a one-off thing for A&M. I don't think that that was just a, whoa, you just got beat by App State. That's embarrassing, but you're going to turn your season around and you're going to make some changes. Because Jimbo Fisher hasn't made changes since 2014. And they found success in 2020. They had a really good team in 2020. I'm just not sure if this team has the talent to be able to execute Jimbo Fisher's offense like he wants to. I'm not sure if this offense has evolved enough to be able to keep defenses on their toes. I think Jimbo is trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. And that's where we are with college football nowadays. His offense just doesn't fit anymore. You know, and he did mention in his press conference after the game that he would consider giving up his offensive play calling duties. Is that true or not? I don't know. I don't know if it's something that he is vehemently not going to do. And he just said it just to appease people. I don't know. But he said he'd consider it. So I'll take the man for his word. You know, and I do think that A&M will see a switch at quarterback. You know, Haynes King was the starter in those first two games. Of course, there's Mac Johnson, a guy that we know very well. And there's also Connor Weigman. I would not be surprised to see Connor Weigman getting the starting nod for Texas A&M this week. But I think that's something for us as LSU fans to look at moving forward, is how this LSU team can beat Texas A&M, because I think that this team will be fairly vulnerable moving forward. Just the state where it is right now, and the fact that it is all eyes on Jimbo Fisher, that the seat is getting hot very quickly for Jimbo Fisher. And I, you know, when I say hot seat, I don't necessarily mean he's going to get fired tomorrow. In my opinion, hot seat is there's just some extra eyes on you. In my opinion, hot seat is, you know, people need more from you. People are expecting more from you and you haven't been able to deliver. There's a large, you know, a large spectrum of hot seat. I think Brian Harsin's on the hot seat for just because the boosters hate him. I think Jimbo Fisher's on the hot seat because you just lost a really embarrassing game and you need to turn the season around because you're getting paid a whole boatload of money to do so. And you just paid a whole lot of recruits with NIL deals to come to your school. So you need to show something for it. Coming up next, the final team that LSU has on their schedule that had kind of a shocking performance. And is that their season or is that a fluke? We'll get into that coming up next. So Alabama, weird, uncharacteristic game against Texas. Ton of penalties. Wide receivers were dropping everything. They were still able to squeak out a win against Texas. But I think, hey, that's a fluke. Nick Saban will turn this ship around. And as long as Bryce Young is your quarterback, you're going to be able to win a whole bunch of games. And I think he proved that in that final drive against Texas. Texas A&M, what the heck, man? What was that disgusting performance, that disgusting offensive performance against an App State defense that gave up 60 points to North Carolina? I think that's just who A&M is this year. Maybe it's not as egregious as losing to App State. Maybe they start to kind of get a little bit of momentum later on in the season whenever LSU does play them. But I do think that that's going to be the narrative of A&M season is we need to see more, and A&M just won't deliver on that. The third head-scratching performance that I saw was from Florida against Kentucky. I picked Florida to beat Kentucky. I think the spread was 5.5. I think it took Florida 5.5, minus 5.5. Because what I saw from Anthony Richardson against Utah was like Heisman-level performance. I'm not saying he deserves the Heisman. I'm just saying it was a Heisman performance. He looked like freaking Cam Newton out there against a top 10 team in the country, one of the best defenses in the country. I thought, oh boy, buckle up, LSU, because this is going to be really scary moving down the pipe, moving down the schedule whenever LSU takes on Florida, because I thought Anthony Richardson had just figured it out. But I also said that going into that game against Kentucky, that Anthony Richardson had a sample size of two starts. One of those starts was against Georgia in 2021, where he threw for 80-something yards and threw three picks. One of those starts was against Utah, where he threw for 160 yards. He ran for about 100, and he ran three touchdowns in, and he just commanded that entire night. That he was in the driver's seat that entire night. He looked like that dude. So I thought, okay, against Kentucky, we have two sample sizes from Anthony Richardson. Which one is it? Which one is he going to be? And I thought he was going to be the Utah Anthony Richardson, because I thought, you know, he's grown a lot as a signal caller in the offseason. He's been able to, you know, throw the ball more effectively, at least against Utah. But I also asked myself the question, if Kentucky or any team that plays Florida is able to stop the run, can Anthony Richardson win games with the ball in his hands? And I didn't know the answer to that question up until Saturday. I think I got my answer against Kentucky, because Kentucky stuffed the run. Florida wasn't able to get much moving in the run game. I mean, Anthony Richardson was limited to just 4 yards on 6 attempts compared to 100-something yards against Utah. Big difference. And he could not control the game with the ball in his hands. He made some very questionable decisions through two picks. And I think we saw some of the reckless decision-making against Kentucky that we saw from Anthony Richardson last season. But I don't know if that's the Florida team moving forward, or if the Utah performance is the Florida team moving forward. So when I look at these questionable performances and I say that's a fluke, or that's, you know, who they are this year with Florida, I honest to God, I have no idea. I don't know, because we've seen some really good from Anthony Richardson, and we've also seen some really bad. We've also seen some bad decision-making. We've also seen some reckless quarterbacking. So I don't know. When it comes down to it, can the offensive line protect Anthony Richardson? Can the offensive line open up enough holes for the run game to be really successful? That's what it comes down to. But it really comes down to, you know, Florida's success and Florida's season comes down to which Anthony Richardson are you going to get? Because it is a tale of two ARs. It's a tale of, you know, you throw picks and you throw balls that you like, wait, where are we going with that? Or you look like Cam Newton. I don't know if Anthony Richardson lies somewhere in the middle, or if he's just hot and he's just cold. I don't know. And I want to know the answer to that question, because I want to know what to expect going into that Florida game. And of course, we have a few weeks and we'll be able to see a little bit more from Anthony Richardson. But where it stands right now going into week three, I don't know. And, you know, Florida plays South Florida this week, so I can only assume that it's going to be a great performance from Anthony Richardson just playing an easier opponent compared to Kentucky. But I don't know, man. With Florida, I'm stumped. I'm so stumped. I'm confused about how you can go out there and look so good against Utah and then just, you know, get rolled over against Kentucky. Kentucky is a good team. I will give Kentucky credit where credit is due. They just keep on winning. Will Levis is that dude. Their pass rush was all up on Anthony Richardson on Saturday night. So all credit to Kentucky, but I just don't know what Florida is. And it's a little frustrating, and I wish I had the answer for that. And I'll continue to look at Florida and, of course, Alabama and Texas A&M and all of the rest of the teams that lie on LSU's schedule. But I think that gives me a good grasp on how I feel about LSU. And I think we'll learn a lot against Mississippi State this weekend because there's not a ton to take away against the Southern game. You know, they played really well. The offense got moving. They came out fast. They played hard. We saw the depth. Those are all good things that can make you feel better moving forward. But, you know, in terms of being battle tested, that's not necessarily there with Southern. So can they continue to build upon the improvements that they made from Florida State to Southern? I want to see that against Mississippi State. I want to see a very fast start against Mississippi State. And I'll have a full breakdown in tomorrow's show about what I need to see from LSU, some of the ways that I think that LSU could win this game, and also some ways that I think LSU could lose this game. But I think, you know, I'm trying to put my finger on exactly what LSU's identity is going to be this season, just as much as I'm doing that with LSU's opponents this season, because that's, you know, just as big of a part of LSU's season as LSU is itself. So we'll continue to look at these teams moving forward. We've got some teams playing cupcakes this week. We've got Florida playing South Florida. You know, that's not necessarily a matchup that really gets you juiced, that gets you jazzed. But this LSU-Mississippi State game will be very telling for where LSU is, a good barometer for where they are. But I'll have a full breakdown of that game, plus what Brian Kelly had to say in his press conference on Thursday night. So we'll get into all of that on tomorrow's edition. But thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcast. But you can get more on the SEC as a whole by making Locked On SEC your second listen. Every day, host Chris Gordy and the local experts of Locked On take you across the SEC in 30 minutes. Make Locked On SEC your second listen.